So you are in town promoting your book, Resurrecting the Shark,
yep.
A Scientific Obsession and the Mavericks Who Solved the Mystery of a 270-million-year-old fossil. And I knew that Ray Troll did some of the artwork about for this. Mm-hmm. I did not realize this really is about him, he and some others.
Right. I think of Ray as the emotional thread, the emotional narrative for the book. Ray has been obsessed by Helicoprion for over 20 years, and I knew of Helicoprion through Ray, but then when I went down to the museum exhibit that they, it's a traveling museum exhibit that they started in about 2013, when I went down for the exhibit, I learned the backstory of the recent scientific breakthroughs that the team in Idaho led and about the history of discovery of Helicoprion. And it just seemed like such an intriguing story and very mysterious and full of this really quirky and interesting science. And I just got hooked on the story. So Ray is kind of the narrative thread for it. The book is about Helicoprion, its discovery and understanding.
And what is Helicoprion more commonly, I guess more commonly, right. that we might understand what it is?
Right, that's right. I assume everyone knows what it is. And it's a 270-million-year-old fossil shark-like animal. And so that puts it, it was living in the middle of the Permian period, which puts it before the dinosaurs. So it was living before the dinosaurs. And we say shark-like animal because it actually isn't related to the group of animals that became today's modern sharks, like the great white sharks and the mako sharks. It's on a different evolutionary lineage, which makes it doubly interesting. But it was this giant, I'm just going to call it a shark, because it probably looked like a shark, and it had a buzzsaw of teeth embedded in the middle of the bottom of its jaw, or at the in the bottom of its jaw, like a pizza cutter stuck in a quart of ice cream. So if the shark was swimming at you, you would see the edge of like a buzzsaw of teeth. It didn't spin, but it was a circular disc of teeth. Very unusual. Was an evolutionary anomaly. No other sharks or shark-like animals have such a thing today, which is why it was so mysterious for so long. They just found these fossils, and they're about the typically they're about the size of a dinner plate, and they just look like a spiral embedded with teeth all the way around, like a fiddlehead fern. Imagine a fiddlehead fern with teeth growing all along those spiraled edges. And so there's nothing like it today, and that's why it was so mysterious.
Speak about, I guess, how they even know this is a shark. How was it discovered? Because my understanding, it's just a fossil of the teeth, correct? Was any more of the animal found?
Well, it's great that you should ask that question, because that was the key to the scientific breakthrough that happened in 2013. So I'll try to give you the cliff notes sort of fast. The first fossil fragment of Helicoprion was found in Western Australia in the 1880s, and it was just a fragment of 14 teeth, so it wasn't in the circle. Was very mysterious. There was another group of ancient shark-like animals called the Edestids that had curved blades of teeth, and so they thought this first Helicoprion fossil was an Edestid. So they already had known a fair amount about the Edestid group, because a lot of fossils had been found, and anyway, that's a different story. But so about 10 years after that first fossil had been found, another complete spiral of teeth was found in the Ural Mountains of Russia, and that fossil made its way to the very esteemed Russian geologist and paleontologist Alexander Karpinsky. Karpinsky is the one who named Helicoprion, from the Greek heliko for spiral and prion for saw. And so Karpinsky is the one who named it, and he proposed in his 1899 paper that it was an ancient shark, and pretty much scientists agreed with that. From that point on, from 1899 on, Helicoprion was considered an ancient shark. What remained the mystery is where this big spiral of teeth fit in the animal. So we have to fast forward from 1899 all the way to 2000 and about 2010. This group of mavericks in Idaho, Jesse Pruitt was looking for an undergrad. It's such a long and involved story. I'm sorry to go on and on, but it's hard to tell just one little piece because every little piece is connected to another piece, which is one of the things I love about the story. Anyway, to make a long story a little bit shorter, in Idaho, they had a beautiful Helicoprion fossil embedded in a piece of phosphatic rock, and they believed, because of a previous paper, that the rock contained bits of fossilized jaw cartilage. So that was the key, because all anyone had ever found before of this fossil was the tooth spiral. And so the guys, Jesse and Leif Tapanella, who was a team in Idaho, they led the scientific work. They CT scanned this rock that was holding the fossil, and the CT scans picked up fossilized jaw material. And so it was the first time anyone had discovered anything other than teeth for Helicoprion. So they were able to reconstruct with scientific evidence, because the fossil, the impression of the tooth whorl was fitting right into the lower jaw. So for the first time ever since the original discovery of the fossil, they were able to say the tooth whorl, this big spiral, fit in the bottom jaw and it basically filled the whole bottom jaw. So it was a big deal, because that had been the main mystery for over 100 years, is where the spiral fit. Because scientists know a fair amount about Paleozoic chondrichthyans. Probably most of your listeners know chondrichthyans are the cartilaginous fish, the sharks, the rays, skates, ratfish. So scientists have known a fair amount about that group of fish, the chondrichthyans, the sharks and stuff. So they just kind of fit Helicoprion into that, what they already knew.
You're talking about a lot of history of fossils and such. Is this something you have always been interested in? Did this story draw you to fossils and such things, or how did this all come out?
Yeah, this story totally drew me in. I've always been interested in nature and rocks and animals and everything. I'm a naturalist writer, and always, you know, love to go out and look around. And I used to commercial fish in Southeast years ago, and was always really interested in what came up. We long lined and hand trolled, and always really curious what came up on the long line. These, you know, weird sea stars and ratfish, all kinds of weird stuff, skates. So I had a natural curiosity about this, but I'd been aware of Helicoprion because I'm an old friend of Ray's. I've been aware of it, but never really as drawn into it as he was. But then when I went down to the exhibit in Idaho, and I met Jesse and Leif, the other scientists, and I saw the fossils, and I realized how much serendipity is in the story. It really drew me in, and I thought, well, it's not going to be that hard. I don't know anything about Paleozoic sharks. It's not going to be that hard. Turns out there's no books on Paleozoic sharks for lay readers, and so I had to educate myself about the fundamentals of paleontology and geology and paleoichthyology, the study of ancient fishes. And so I include that in the book because what's interesting about the scientific breakthroughs of Helicoprion are so kind of arcane and nuanced. You have to know how cool this stuff is, you sort of have to know the basics of geology and paleontology and the history of science and even some cultural history. So I include that in the book to kind of bring readers along with me on my journey of discovery, so that they'll think it was as cool as I thought it was by the end of the book. And one of the things I love about the story is that we're able to use this one beast, this Helicoprion, this very strange evolutionary oddity, and track its discovery and understanding from the 1800s until today. And that traces the changing nature of scientific inquiry by that beast, because they were so, it was in the book, I sort of used the analogy of the blind men and the elephant. You know, they had this tooth whorl, but they didn't have anything to connect it to. So the story of the blind men and the elephant is one of the blind men takes a hold of the tail and he goes, "It's a snake." And the other one feels the side of the elephant and he says, "It's a wall." And the other one feels the trunk of the elephant and he says, I forget something, you know, like maybe that was a snake. I don't remember. But anyway, so they had these little bits and pieces. And as scientific processes and techniques and tools improved, they were able to learn more and more and more, whether it's CT scans or, just even knowing, the geology of strata and stuff, how to age rocks and things. So I learned a ton writing the book, and it's such a great story. There's a lot of weird, quirky scientists and amateur fossilists and crazy animals. So it was really fun to research and write.
And I should say it's not heavily technical. I wasn't able to read the entire book, but the portions I read, very accessible, very
good.
Readable.
Yeah.
So you don't have to be an ichthyologist or something, right, or a paleontologist to understand.
The most fun thing for me has been, my friends know that I've written this book, and they say, "Oh yeah, I can't wait to read your book." And I can tell by the looks on their faces, they're like, "Oh my God, I have to read this book." And then the thing that's so fun for me is they come back a few weeks later and they go, "Oh my God, I read your book. And I love the story." And so it is, it's a story, and there's a lot of people in it and some science also.
So did you get, in a sense, inspired to do this by knowing Ray Troll? I mean, or was that disconnected?
Well, he was the link, because I wouldn't have known about it. And also, this book in the acknowledgments, I say this book would not exist without Ray, because Ray was kind of the keeper of the Helicoprion flame, because it's not been studied by very many people, and the scientists who had studied this animal had died, because they're all, you know, elder statesmen, older people. And so Ray had been sort of the default vessel of information about Helicoprion. He'd collected all the older papers and knew where the fossils were and everything like that. And so Ray made available to me, while I was writing the book, his emails, his notes, his memories, his stories, his connections. And so he just gave me access to a tremendous amount of material and that's what makes the book sort of so personal, and with a lot of personal anecdotes about it. And then, of course, I met the other current scientists and interviewed them, but I couldn't have done it without Ray's help, his notes and all his sort of archival material.
And Ray Troll is a Ketchikan artist. He fashioned, shall we say, or came up with drawings of this shark.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And that is, in a sense, from imagination, from, you know, because again, how would you really know what this ancient shark would look like?
Exactly. And some of the most sort of the pickiest scientists, they'll say, well, Ray's drawings are not reconstructions, because technically reconstructions are illustrations built around existing actual fossils. And the only fossils that we have of Helicoprion are tooth whorls, and there's about 170 tooth whorls in the world. And then this one fossil, Idaho number 4, that had cartilage, jaw cartilage material. That's all. But there are sort of loosely related ancient Chondrichthyans that have left fossils of their tails, or maybe some of their, fins or whatever. But really it is an imaginary illustration, but it's as close as we're going to get. And at this point, until they find some new things, and it's based on science and it's based on best educated guesses. And I think these kind of illustrations are really important to science, because we need these visualizations of these ancient animals. We're never going to see Helicoprion, because it's been dead for a really long time. But if we can have a good guess of what they looked like, we can imagine them. And that time of Earth's history we can kind of bring it to life in our imaginations. And so I think art has a really important role in science, even though artists do take liberties, and, you know, that's kind of a subject of contention in the scientific community. Artists do take liberties sometimes with imagining these ancient animals, but that's what makes kids so excited about ancient animals, dinosaurs or sharks or whatever, and it helps us understand, and I think it sparks our curiosity. It builds our curiosity because it gives us some place to start imagining these animals, and then, you know, and then we say, well, how do we know that? Oh, they didn't leave these fossils. So you dig a little deeper into the science of it, and pretty soon you're a budding paleontologist.
So this Thursday night, you are giving a presentation at the Ketchikan Public Library on your book. Yep. What can people expect during that presentation?
It's a PowerPoint presentation, but I promise it's not like PowerPoint. I have a bunch of snapshots of people, Ray and Jesse and Leaf and the rest of the team, and pictures of fossils and some of Ray's artwork and, some surprise multimedia stuff. And so it's a kind of an illustrated talk about that follows the arc of the book. So people can come, hopefully, and enjoy the visuals and the presentations without having read the book or knowing anything about Helicoprion. And hopefully, after the end of it, you'll have a sense of the story and of the animal and of the people that are part of the story.
You have also collaborated with Yvonne Zerbetz.
Yes.
On some projects here that people might be familiar with.
Yep. Yvonne's in my first book was Lucky Hares and Itchy Bears, and then we did 10 Rowdy Ravens together, and we signed a bunch of books at Blueberry Fest, which was really fun, and we're working on a couple more projects, which is very exciting, we're just brainstorming on some stuff. So, yeah, Yvonne has been a great friend and collaborator since the 90s.
So is that kind of your next project, or do you have several other projects in the works?
Hopefully we'll push those, push working on those. And that's my fun stuff. I also have a day job because it's hard, you know, to make a living on shark books. So, I have a day job, and I volunteered for the Slugfest at the Blueberry Fest. So I'm going to hopefully write a little story about slugs and the slug race, because I'd never been to something like that. I had no idea it was so exciting. I mean, I was exhausted at the end. It was very exciting, except for the last race was a little bit of a sleeper. That's the fun thing about being a writer. I didn't know anything about slugs, I have to say. So to get ready for my gig as a slug wrangler, I started reading up on slugs. They're very interesting animals and have an important role in the ecosystem, even though they don't have an important role in your garden. And then listening to the kids talk about their slugs and naming their slugs, it was really fun. And so that's the perk of being a writer, is getting to learn all this stuff and talk to people.